Good morning, everybody. I'm one of them. I can hear you. We're so small here. I'm Rick Smith. Dusty, her husband, is the grand poobah. And then there's another guy who also is a part of the triumvirate. He's back in with the young adults. So we're spread about here. We're talking about discipleship. Last Sunday at 11 o'clock, talked about discipleship in the context of a battle. And the fact that one does not happen in an antiseptic environment. It's not like we're in a neonatal unit all our lives and all the factors are controlled. The reality is, from the day that we're born by the Spirit of God to the day that we see Jesus, there is rumbling going on all around us and within us. And so we talked about the context a little bit, and I'll start with the Great Commission in just a second, and again, the foundation that lays. Then we'll talk more about the battle itself and ask some questions related to that. So John, if you'll put up Matthew chapter 28. We all know that Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 through 20, is the Great Commission. We see it echoed again in the book of Acts in the beginning, a little bit different version, but generally the same thing being communicated. And Jesus told his disciples, he said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go make disciples." Now, you've heard me say this about a million and two times, but I'm going to say it again just for fun. Okay, and that is the governing verb in this is make disciples. It is not go. If you look at the Greek construction of what was said, of course, Jesus said it in Hebrew Aramaic. But in all that translation, the governing verb of what's there is make disciples. So really, the way we really should read this is not go, it should be make disciples while you're going. So the assumption is that we're going to be going. And the thing that we ought to be doing all the time is making disciples of Jesus. He said, "Make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you, and I'm going to be with you always to the end of the age." Okay. So in this commission, essentially the marching orders to be about what we're supposed to be making disciples. So I have a few questions, like usual. First one is, so does a disciple of Jesus make disciples of Jesus by definition? Okay? Does a disciple of Jesus make disciples of Jesus by definition? If to make disciples is the marching orders, then when Jesus says, "Come follow me, fishers of men," which is we're making disciples. Okay, so there's a oughtness in this that if we're going to follow Jesus and we're going to be disciples, then it means we're going to be about the Father's business, which in this case is making disciples of Jesus. The last time I checked, the last time any one of us supposedly surrendered to the authority of Jesus, there was no opt-out clause that said, "Oh yeah, by the way, I get to leave this part out. I get all the benefits, none of the mission." That's just not the way it works. So when we surrender to the authority of Jesus, which is what we mean when we say Jesus is the Lord of our lives, when that's true, if we're saying that's who we are, then we're going to be about what Jesus said we ought to be about. So to follow Him is to make disciples. Second question. So, can someone be a disciple of Jesus then and make the choice not to make disciples of Jesus? Mickey says yes. I got others who's shaking their head no. So Mickey, tell me why you say yes. I'm not talking about being a believer. And there's the rub. Worse than they were in the beginning. Yeah. We have a problem because I'm still wrestling with this. And that's why I'm bringing it up. I think we have got it wrong. Faith in Jesus is about being a disciple and following Jesus. Biblical. In the Bible, that is it. There is no B option. We have added a B option. We have added this B option where if I believe all the facts, I'm saved. I don't know anybody's heart. And I'm not claiming to know anybody's heart. I don't know who's going to heaven, who's not going to heaven. That is not my job. But the call is to be a disciple, not to believe a set of facts. Not to pray a prayer, and not to feel like I'm secure for all eternity. God takes care of me. Because in that, it is all selfish. You hear what I'm saying? At every point, the gospel is about serving a living God, worshiping a living God, and joining Him in what He's doing. And making disciples is life-changing. And Jesus knew it, which is why He said, take up your cross daily and follow Me. Can you be a disciple and not make disciples? Okay, we're talking big picture life purpose. Okay? It's one thing to be disobedient and not do something that God is prompting me to do. That's not good, but it doesn't mean that I don't have the mindset of making disciples. It just means that I made a poor, selfish choice today. Does that make sense? And I love you, but the American church has messed up our minds because your calling as a maker of disciples and mine is not any different. We just have different roles. We have the same calling. In the Great Commission, it did not say if you're a pastor, yours is different. It did not say if you play guitar on a Sunday morning and you work in TV center, a family business, that your calling's different. We're supposed to both be making disciples. It may be that you're praying for the people, you're praying with the people that work for you. It may mean that you're encouraging them whenever they need to hear Jesus' voice, and you're the one who gets the job for the day. Okay? It may be that there's some grandkid they've got who's all up, and you're giving them godly advice. You are disciple making. The problem is when we believe that it's all about us, and we believe that all we have to do is pray a prayer and then live our lives the way we want to, or even just live and enjoy the things that we think are convenient or fun, and we never deal with the battle. Because you see, the moment we start really asking God to help us make disciples and looking for opportunities to do that and to team up with others to do that, we're going to see that the full force of the battle begins to come against us. We'll get to this, but that is, it begins within us, within our flesh. It has to go and it extends to the world system that is against the kingdom of God. And it has to do with the evil one who has schemes that he puts all over in order to trip us up, to attack us, to tempt us, whichever. Okay? Those things are a part of the battle, the battlefield. I've got one more question with this. So what does the spiritual battle have to do with discipleship? What do you think? What do you remember? What does the battle, spiritual battle, have to do with discipleship? I think it's pretty consistent with the New Testament that Jesus said, if it happened to me, it can happen to you, and probably will. And yet, if you're like me, many, 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 many of the people that I've gone to church with, that I've shared community with in the faith, do not believe that. None of us like discomfort. None of us like suffering. None of us like feeling the pressure of being disagreed with because of who we say we follow. Well, that's one of the lessons. That is a discipleship lesson. It's a rather hard discipleship lesson. I think that has to do with submission to authority. Okay? And that if we're not talking about things that are anti-Jesus or against God, then the issue is, am I a part of the solution or am I a part of the problem? And there is a very important lesson that most Christians in America don't accept, because we have this individualistic pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps, assert yourself mentality that's been ingrained in us and in our culture. But for us, it's not to say that we have to agree with ungodly things. We shouldn't. But if it's not one of those situations, then we ought to submit to spiritual authority. Don't hear me. Again, I'm not talking about ungodly stuff. I'm not talking about creepy, weird stuff that the culture wants to say, oh, this is what happens when. That's not what I'm talking about. Yes, we all ought to confront that ungodly stuff. Absolutely. Shouldn't let any unholy, unrighteous, ungodly thing run amok. Never. But in times when it's a matter of either preference or opinion, or submit to spiritual authority. God's placed them in that spiritual authority for a reason. And we act like we know better. Sometimes when God's trying to protect us. Heidi. It's part of what He knows we're going to face. And it does, when we encounter the battle, that is our classroom for becoming more like Jesus. Sometimes we respond well in the situation. We trust God. We let Him be the one who fights the battle. And sometimes we try to fight them, or we try to do stuff on our own. And then we learn from our failures. It's right. And what have you heard us say over and over again? There's times where God lets us go through the same lessons over and over and over again till we get it. And then finally, it's like we'll have a breakthrough. We trust God and we either do things His way or we trust Him and we find, hey, why didn't I do this before? So, let's look at the next slide. So these were some things that we last week talked about being true if we look at that Matthew 28 passage in the Great Commission. So, who? Well, you or anyone else who crosses your path in life, that's who is supposed to be making disciples. Anybody who says they're going to follow Jesus. What are we supposed to do? Supposed to make disciples, followers of Jesus. Why does it matter that we put followers of Jesus? Why is it important that we emphasize?
Because He's the only way to heaven.
See, I think the problems are, yeah, those are the easy ones to pick out. It's the ones that seem so benign. But he's a godly leader. I loved listening to Him teach. He's so thorough, or He's so energetic, or his personality is so appealing. He can get such a crowd. Or McChurch is the best church to go to, because McChurch has all the bells and whistles. McChurch has the programs. McChurch has the pastor. McChurch has everything my children need. McChurch has great music, and it's like going to a concert every Sunday. So, it's important that we're talking about making disciples of Jesus, not making disciples of McChurch. Say that a little bit louder.
Or Pastor McWright.
Oh, yes. Pastor McWright or whatever. Yes, exactly. That's true. Absolutely. Okay. So, it matters that we're talking about making disciples of Jesus, not all the other things. See, all this other stuff is subtle. And it is, I believe, a strategic plan to undermine the kingdom of God. Now, every church ought to want to grow, but it ought to want to grow because it's making disciples, not because it's making a better offering to people who like convenience or like to be entertained. Any church that grows because it's making disciples, I'm not going to argue with. Church that grows because it has, the buffet, no. I'm not going to delight in churches that grow because they offer a buffet. How? Behavior, speech, time, investment, use of resources, relationships. So essentially, what are we saying? When do we make disciples? How do we make disciples? as you go, and you're leveraging everything. Remember my illustration about Amway the other day, or a couple of Sundays ago? Y'all remember that? Okay. Kind of, you know, seeing people that we interact with as being someone who needs to be a disciple who makes disciples. When? You've got the 24/7, we've got that. Where? Wherever we go. Why? Because remarkably, miraculously, God has interposed Himself in our lives and stepped in a personal way at some point and said, you are the woman. You are the man. You are the one that I intend to authorize, deputize, delegate, empower to make a disciple of somebody. So the question at the bottom, how can we be intentional without being programmatic? Because the problem is, in American think, we think that in order to be intentional, we have to have a program to do it. Think back. What environments or relationships have you really seen your life change the most through, especially when it comes to faith? Was it because Dusty said something on a Sunday morning and you just went, wow, my life's different? Or was it because somebody spent time with you day after day, week after week, conversation after conversation, discipling you? A lot of times one-on-one. I remember Eddie Rain's kitchen after FCA meetings when I was teaching my first stop at my alma mater in Atlanta. Every Monday night we had FCA, and every Monday night when FCA was over, that was whenever me and Eddie would talk for about another hour, an hour and a half. And his wife would just come in over and over. She was just so sweet. Because I was too hungry for somebody to pour into me to realize that, yeah, I'm getting in the way of their life. But they let me do that. Intentional without being programmatic. Sometimes the most important thing we do is share with somebody or listen to somebody who's struggling. You know, you listen to somebody who's struggling parenting their kids. And it's not that you're an expert, but you listen. And then if you know something that maybe you know is godly counsel, you share it with them, and they may not even do, but at least you have listened to them, you've prayed with them, you've shared with them what you feel like God's placed on. That's discipleship. Because it's about life. It's about following Jesus. Discipleship is not loading up all these classes and having all this junk in between your ears. We can have the greatest theology in the world between our ears, but unless it changes who we are and how we live and that we make disciples, it doesn't matter. John, next slide. So some conclusions we can look at that I told you about last Sunday. That each one of us and all of us bear the calling. Mickey, that's where I was going with. We're all making disciples. If we're following Jesus, we're making disciples. Secondly, we are to be prepared to make disciples. So my question is, how has God prepared you to make disciples? How is He preparing you to make disciples? I could ask another question. What battles did you fight this week? Battles with the world system. Battles with your flesh. Battles with attacks from the evil one. Temptations from the evil one. Yes, absolutely. Teen. I mean, essentially, you know, that was very much of what Paul was talking about when he said, hey, you know, you can't be a Apollos guy. You can't be a Paul guy. You can't be a, you know, fill in the blank guy. You know, it's a matter of all of us together working towards and realizing that some people get to do the tilling of the soil in somebody's life. Somebody gets to plant the seed. Somebody gets to harvest it. Somebody gets to cultivate. You know, all those things that take place in agrarian, you know, figurative language, is what we're doing together using whatever God puts in our hands to accomplish for His kingdom, to make disciples. Yes. The music guys, they're a part of that. Everything that we have that's in our hands is what God intends for us to use to make disciples. prepared. Being prepared and preparing. Realizing that everything that we have, everything that we encounter is a part of what God equips us with to make disciples. Even our failures. It's not just being the all-star. Because if you look in the Bible, I don't see too many all-stars on the team. I see a lot of guys that hit 250. That means 750% of the time they were whiffing or hitting the ball to somebody else. Those of you who aren't baseball fanatics, forget. Next, got to be willing to make disciples. That's kind of where we are a lot of times. That's what Mickey's talking about, is the willingness, I think. I think that the issue is if we're a disciple, we are willing. And if we're buying into a watered down idea of what Jesus was talking about and following Him, then we might convince ourselves that we don't have to be willing. I believe we can get back there. I do. I think that we can restore to me the joy of my salvation and renew a right spirit within me. That's what that is. And I believe if we ask God for that, we can get back there. It's a choice. Something that we had lots of discussions and thinking about, conversations I've had with Luke. Joy is a choice. We have to choose to be joyful, because we will not be joyful if we do not choose to be joyful, because we end up letting circumstances dictate everything in our lives. But we got to choose joy. In the middle of the battle, we have to choose joy. So what have you found to be the most challenging aspect of making disciples? What's the hardest thing about making disciples? Can I confess? For me, it's getting over myself. Maybe getting over me being tired. It may be getting over entitlement. Oh, I deserve this. I deserve that. I deserve 2 hours of not having to do, whatever it might be. How about you? What's the hardest thing for you about making disciples? In introductory physical science, Miss Fears, who was a sweet lady, I was in 8th grade, couldn't understand half the words she said. But on her blackboard, it said, "When you have a question, ask the busy man, the other kind has no time." Part of this is, if we really believe people wanted to be discipled, we would make time for it. If there were people that we really believe wanted us to pour into their lives, I think we would be more motivated to do it. We would be more thoughtful. And so we have to make sure, and I preached on this probably 2 months ago, we have to make sure we've got this balance, that we are pouring into people and we're discipling them, and that we also are pursuing people who can disciple us. Because I believe if we are being actively discipled through relationships, we will be more prepared and cognizant of doing it in other people. But if we don't have somebody that we have that kind of relationship with, then we are less likely to go do it with somebody else. That makes sense? So if I'm sitting down once every couple of weeks with somebody and we're talking about things and we're having our conversation, perhaps we're going through a book in the Bible, we're reading a book, whatever it might be. If I'm doing that with somebody, I'm going to be more likely to do that with somebody else. Now, think that's true for you? So if we're going to be disciples, we're going to follow, we need to find somebody that can help us in our journey. And we need to make time and say, "Hey, I want some of your time. Can you give me some?" And guess what? It encourages them and it encourages us. And then we find that we then, not too long after, see the value in it, and we begin to see. So we too ought to be pursuing people who can pour into us. What do you think? Okay. Now, the hard part of this is then what? Nike theology. Find somebody that can pour into you and hang out with them. Now, it may be that they've got something that they can help you with, and so you ask them to help you, and then things go from there. Or it may be things that you can help them with, and you know, whatever it might be. It doesn't always have to be, well, let's sit down and let's have this theological conversation. It may not be that at all. Maybe working on a car. It may be doing something at your house. Whatever it might be. Okay? Again, whatever we got in our hands is resource to be used in making disciples. Okay, let's go to the 1 John passage. John, we'll probably end up rip snorting through this here. All right, so as we look at 1 John, if you look at the whole letter of 1 John, it is all about spiritual battle. It talks initially about the battle that we have going on within us with our flesh and temptation. And then it transitions into discussing what do you do when you encounter deceivers and the one who is behind all the deceiving. Okay. Essentially, it is talking about the discipleship process that takes place within the battle. And in that passage, there's one passage here that we talk about a lot of times. It talks about children and fathers and young men. And the whole idea here is that the battle is what develops us. The opportunities that come with struggle and testing and challenge and attacks, dealing with attacks. And that fathers have known God from the beginning and have seen and have gone through what the young men have gone through, and they now have a certain level of experience which they can pour into children and young men. Young men in this passage are being described as those who are engaging in spiritual battles, struggling with the world, the flesh, and the devil, and are winning, sometimes losing, but learning from the fight. And children are the ones who have just come to know the Father, and just like a child, Father is awesome. And they know that. But they haven't fought any battles yet. So we got this passage set in the middle of 1 John. And so we've got a couple of quick conclusions for this, in this understanding of the battle and discipleship taking place in the context of this battle. And John, next slide. And that is, the process of maturity, which is the path of discipleship, is not merely academic. It is experience, and I could add a lot of other adjectives there. Things like relational, behavioral, experiential, attitudinal, all that. Okay, but it's not just intellectual. It's not just knowing the right stuff, or even believing the right stuff. What did the Bible say about the evil one? Does he know the right stuff? Okay? So knowing the right stuff doesn't make us more like Jesus. It's living, growing in our living of the right stuff. Second thing there, that is, we've got to engage in spiritual battles and learn from them. Failing to engage is to already lose and live in disobedient ignorance. It's like the person in the movie where, you know, there's Martians and everything, they're all zipping, zapping, and flying, and we see rays going on, and there's a guy just whistling, walking down the street, like none of it exists, like it's not there. Why do you think that the church in America has focused so much on the intellectual and not the relational, experiential, or behavioral, or attitudinal, or all those other things? We're so focused on the intellectual. Okay. Generally, in the church in America, what have we used as criteria to put people in roles of leadership? Education, influence, sometimes wisdom, okay, personality. Most of that is not biblical. It ought to be people who either are fighting spiritual battles and or have fought spiritual battles and learned from them and are now discipling those who are in the midst of the heat of the battle. Wouldn't you think? So I got a couple of questions and we'll quit. So here's my three questions. So what have you learned from your battles with the world system? Second question, what have you learned from your battles with your flesh? Three, what have you learned from your battles with the devil? Because all those are lessons that God intends to use to make you more like Jesus, and then also intends for you and I to use when we invest our lives in other people, making disciples. Discipleship does not happen in a vacuum. It happens in the middle of the battle. And the battle is a large part of what develops us into being more like Jesus. All righty. Mike, you close this, please. Prayer.